Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life on the 1st of January, 2025. 7 o'clock in the morning. The wind is whipping around the house. I went to bed early last night. I believe that even despite the wind, people were trying to have fireworks. But luckily, I didn't see nor hear too much of that, which was rather useful from my point of view anyway. But for those poor people who did want to go out and celebrate, what people I've noticed, so many people have been going, but it's not really a new year, is it? People have got very anal now about things that they've been quite happy to celebrate for most of their life. And now, I mean, I suppose I'm talking about people in the truth movement who are going, but the new year doesn't start until April in the spring. Let me just have a slurp of hot lemon and honey this morning. I still haven't shifted quite everything, but I feel a lot better. And it is quite interesting, and I do know what they mean when they say that. But it's like a circle, isn't it? If you imagine a circle, there is no beginning and there is no end. It is a complete ring. And you can effectively put a pin in anywhere in that circle. You could put a pin in anywhere in the 365 days that we use to delineate a year. And you could say that's the beginning. So it doesn't really make any difference. Although people will, of course, argue that, but new life starts. Well, when did old life die? And did it all die? Did everything come to a dead? Was there an actual full stop? And no, because trees in the winter are still forming buds. The life is there. It may not have gone out into blossoms. And different flowers will come out at different times. The snow, what do they call them? The snow bells, whatever they are. I forget what they call those early white flower snowdrops. Could you not say that that is the beginning of life then? They come out in January. No, but lambs and the blossom and... So there isn't really a point at which anything starts and dies, because everything starts and dies at different times. And time is another thing, isn't it? Not that's difficult to really pinpoint, I think, because time is an illusion, for one thing. You say, well, it's 7 o'clock on the 1st of January. Is it? Prove it. Prove that it's 7. Well, I can point to various clocks. Oh, yes. And what does that prove? It just proves that somebody somewhere has adjusted the hands of the clock to say that one thing. But that, how do you prove to all uncertainty that that is actually the time, the actual time in the universe, that everything, because nothing goes by the same time, of course. Now, I've picked up Kilvert's Diary, a selection edited and introduced by William Plomer. And I'd... trying to find where a January might start. New Year's Day, 1871. So until I've worked out exactly what I'm going to do, this may well have to do. And we can follow in his footsteps, as we followed briefly in bits. I had a chap called Ed come over last night. Julia, alas, had to stay at home now that her children are back from their holiday with their ex, her ex mother, in law, and they'd been up in Birmingham. So now they're back, and he, the ex, was working. So she was looking after the kids. And my friend Ed came over, and he brought with him a bottle of port. We only had one glass. He was driving, and I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to drink much anyway, to be honest, alcohol. And he also bought some cheeses, and I cooked a casserole, which he thoroughly enjoyed, actually. A beef casserole, which was all farm food. And so we had a nice chin chat, put the world to rights. And yesterday I thought I had was making headway, but in the event I'm still feeling not 100% as bright as a button as I would like to have felt. But I'm hoping that now I'm a lot better. I did do a fair bit of writing yesterday, so I managed to get some stuff done that I wanted to, and, you know, a video and a Naked Englishman. New Year's Day, 1871. My mother, Perch, and I sat up last night to watch the old year out and the new year in. I assume Perch must be a dog. The wind was in the north, and the sound of the bells came faintly and muffled over the snow from Chippenham and Kington. We opened the dining room window to loose in the sound of the chimes and the new year, as they say in Wales. It was bitter cold, and we went to the door, Perch and I, to hear better. I was carrying my travelling clock in my hand, and as we stood on the terrace just outside the front door, the little clock struck midnight with its tinkling silvery bell in the keen frost. We thought we could hear peals of church bells at Chippenham, St. Paul's, and then faintly Kington. Ring, happy bells across the snow. When Perch came back from skating at Draycott last night, he amused us with an account of Friday and Saturday's doings on ice. Okay, he's not a dog. I'm not quite sure who Perch is, but there we are. On Friday, they had a quadrille band from Malmesbury, skated quadrilles, Lancers and Sir Roger de Coverley. Then they skated up and down with torches, ladies and gentlemen pairing off and skating arm in arm, each with a torch. There were numbers of Chinese lanterns all around the water, blue, crimson and green lights, magnesium riband, and a fire balloon was sent up. Maria Audrey, forgetting herself and the passing of time, inevitably spoke to Perch, calling him Teddy instead of Mr. Kilvert. Oh, I wonder if that's his father, then. Having done, which he perceived her mistake, turned away and smote herself on the mouth, while Perch looked at her with a face like stone. While people were standing about in groups or skating up and down, gently, young Spencer skated up suddenly with outstretched arms to shake hands with Teddy. At the critical moment, his skate hitched, and he lost his balance and made a deep but involuntary obeisance before Perch, describing an attenuated arch with his fingers and toes resting on the ice. People hid their faces, turned their skates away with a sour smile or grinning with repressed laughter. Perch stood still waiting for the attenuated arch to unbind itself and retrieve its erect posture, looking on with a face like stone. Gradually the arch rose from its deep obeisance. The arch was the arch described by an attenuated tomcat. During the torch skating, Harriet Audrey hurled her half-burnt torch ashore. Lord Cowley was walking up and down the path on the bank, watching with great impatience the skaters whom he detests. The fiery torch came whirling and flaming through the dark and hit the whole noble diplomatist he's got here, sharply across the shins, rebounding from where it lay, blazing on the floor from a tree. Lord Cowley was very angry. "I wish these people wouldn't throw their torches about here at me," grumbled his lordship. "Come away and hide behind the island, or he'll see you," said Perch to Harriet. So they glided away, and from the cover of the island they watched Lord Cowley angrily beating the blazing torch against the ground to try and put it out. But the more he beat it, the more the torch flamed and showered sparks into his face. Harriet described the incident thus: "I hit old Cowley such a crack over the shins." Last week, Mr. Greenwood, the Calne organist, fell on boxwood ice and broke his nose. The next day, his son, a boy of 15, fell while skating, struck his head against a stone, fractured his skull, and died in an hour and a half by the lakeside. It's charming, isn't it? That's it. That was the New Year's Day. The next day, his son, 15, fell while skating, struck his head against a stone, fractured his skull, and died in an hour and a half by the lakeside. That's actually quite tragic. Long time ago, I assume the family have got over it. Anyway, that was quite interesting. I wonder what they use to keep the torches going. What fuel? I would be interested to know how they made those torches. But people do strange things, don't they? And they do take these risks. I suppose a 15-year-old is likely to do that. But that is very sad to have basically, through some simple joviality, slipped up and fractured your head. I mean, it can happen to anybody, I suppose. And indeed it happened to the organist's son, who presumably is one of the most pious of the members of the church, and yet still he was taken away. And you wonder what that's all about, if there was rhyme and reason to any of this. Assuming it to be true, of course, and not a figment of Kilvert's imagination as he writes his diary, but one must... At least, I suppose, him being a, whatever he was, a parson, a country parson, would not be lying, or the compiler of the book would not be lying, or whatever, who knows. And it's written as a passing interest, and yet it is actually somebody's life that was for 15 years and then so easily snuffed out. It is, the world is a bizarre place, is it not? It is a very strange place, and this realm that we inhabit for however long that we are lucky enough not to slip on some ice and crack open our skulls and brain ourselves, we suffer all sorts of things. And this is the thing, really, I suppose. The thing is that life is tough enough without us making it tougher for each other. And yet, we know that it is good to love thy neighbour, to be kind to one another, to help. And yet, we have beset ourselves with rules and regulations, with governments and councils, with police and judiciary, that seem to not say, yes, how can I help, but no, how can I hinder your life? We seem to have put As I say, life is hard enough. The fact that we have ignorantly gone down this path that somebody else has designed for us of preparing ourselves constantly for work, to earn money, to pay somebody else for the privilege of just living. Those things which ordinarily are free, you know, you look at wild animals, they don't pay for their food, they don't pay for their shelter. They have the effort of going and getting them, of course, and they may have to outrun and outwit certain predators, but they don't have to go to the council, and they don't worry about letters coming telling them off. And yet we do have set up a world in which that weird type of administration in which you cannot even pay somebody money to live in a house, you know, buy a house, without then the council swooping in and going, oh yes, you can live there, all right, but you owe us money. For what? Well, for all these services. Well, I don't want those services, but you'll pay us anyway. Oh, what, you mean like the mafia? You know, if we don't pay, you'll send the boys round. Is that what you mean? Is this a protection racket? It is, isn't it? It's precisely what the council tax is. It's a protection racket. And you can't choose. You can't say, well, actually, I'll just have the bins, please. I'm not worried about the lights. I don't worry about the police. The police are all corrupt now. I don't need to pay them anything. I'm not really happy with what you've done in the park and all those buildings you've ripped down and those new ones you've put up. I'm not very happy about that. I don't want to pay you. I'm not rewarding you for that privilege. Thanks very much. No, on your bike, mate. And you can't pick and choose. It's a big hot potato with a lot of people, of course, and I think a lot of people are right, personally. But anyway, what to look forward to today, never mind the rest of the bloody year, what to look forward to today is hopefully some more writing of my book, Biggleswick. The wind is howling, and unless that settles, I probably won't be nipping out, for fear of slipping up and cracking open one's skull. Anyway, I'm drinking hot lemon and honey to try and settle my throat and my stomach. I've had some probiotics as well this morning. So we will see. Anyway, it was interesting to read that entry from old Kilvert's diary. So we'll go with that as far as we can, and if I can come across some others in the course of the year, we'll see how we do. Anyway, thank you for listening. If you did, look after yourselves and keep smiling.